And welcome back to We Talk to Ourselves, the only podcast on the internet that has a plastic table as its setting. Because, you know, feast or famine.
You were very just defeated in that one. Just
but you know
like,
what, Eli?
I mean, I think it also had a lot to do with the socks full of soap that we were beating him with during the break.
I mean, like, I have a rich mahogany table, but you peasants can't.
It smells of rich mahogany. Do you have many leather-bound books?
Actually, I do have a lot of leather-bound books.
We decided on the song,
sweet.
And I did
I did
lead.
Too, but mine are all handmade.
I demand a reset.
Human
I said Eli's the best, and everyone should have followed with the chorus.
No.
Around. No one's ever gonna keep me down.
Anyway.
What was it? Immortal Celebrities?
Is immortal that Celebrities. That's where we're starting out with hour two.
I want to start off with John Stamos.
I got a second.
He's going to be, not starring, but he's going to be joining the cast of Necessary Roughness, which I've never seen because I don't care. But I saw John Stamos, and I'm like, he's obviously gotten older, but I'm like, oh, well, like, he's in his 30s.
He was on Glee.
Wait a second.
He was just on Glee, yeah.
Wait a second. John Stamos was, like, in his 30s 20 years ago. Yeah. I don't understand what's going on. Because, like, and what got me is his chin. Like, as men get older, they start to lose their chin. It's just how life is. But he still has his, and it's still there, and it's still just like, I can freaking cut cheese with this chin. And I don't understand how that's possible.
See, my submission for Immortal Celebrity is what I think clearly is the winner. Keanu Reeves. I don't know how many of you listening ever saw the Bill and Ted movies. If you haven't, go watch them.
They're
amazing. Look at Keanu Reeves and flash forward until now. Besides the beard, he looks freaking identical. You can't tell a difference. It's like, oh, hey, look, that's a pic. Oh, wait, no, that's actually him now.
And not only that,
25 years later.
There's a conspiracy going around that he is, in fact, an immortal, like a Highlander immortal.
Yeah, there's a video on YouTube called Keanu Reeves is Immortal. You should check it out. There's a painting of Paul Monet. He was a famous French painter who actually lived in
the West Indies
for a while until he died.
He turned into Sean Connery for a second there.
Yeah.
He's a famous French painter.
He died in 1850. This painting is exactly like Keanu Reeves. It's even got the current beard.
There's
an interview that Keanu... There's even an interview with Keanu Reeves where they were asking him about how much money he had, and he said, and this is a direct quote, "I have enough money to last me for centuries." Now, how many times have you heard a celebrity say that? Who else but an immortal would think in terms of centuries?
Well, how specific is that statement,
too? Also,
what other celebrities do you know of that, like, when he got all his money, he didn't just go, "Money!"
Okay. By the way, if you guys don't know this, you should send Keanu Reeves, like, a thank you card or maybe, like, a muffin basket. Because he's had a really rough life in the past 15 years.
Also, he's given an immense amount of money to charity.
God,
he gave up half of his paycheck so that the studio would be able to hire these big-name actors they wanted.
And not only
he's given up, I think, $10,000 to put...
He actually put up $500,000 on, I think it was the second or third Matrix movie, so that the crew could get a big bonus. $500,000, so that people he didn't know could have more money.
Yeah, seriously. Just, like, send him a card that says,
you're awesome.
You're a good guy.
To be fair, he's been
you.
Saving money since at least 1630,
And by the way, Charlemagne. Go look up a painting of Charlemagne. He looks like Keanu Reeves. I'm just saying.
I have two now. One is, obviously, The Matrix isn't a movie. It's a documentary, and that's why he can do that. And two, The Immortal Theory. That's another thing going around now about another guy, Jay-Z. There's this fake picture of 1920 in front, I guess, I don't know if it's a building where he lives or close to where he lives.
Yeah.
He's sitting on a car in 1920. And it's not one of those, like, hey, want no antique photo? Like, somebody was like, hey, this guy looks like Jay-Z, and sent it to TMZ. And then TMZ was like, oh my gosh, this is Jay-Z! I mean,
and Jay-Z responded with,
fair,
don't worry about it.
Very credible.
I mean, granted, you did just reference TMZ. I think you just threw our credibility out the window, too.
Jay-Z is handcuffed, apparently.
No, I would like to point out, I'm fairly sure that Charlemagne was beheaded, so he can't be Keanu Reeves. No, Highlanders, no. No, they're
except
dead.
He's not
anyway.
A Highlander.
Anyway, the body double. Is, as far as you know, Charlemagne was beheaded. There's a lot of misinformation that could be
floating
around.
Anyway, I was going to point out Dick Clark, as I think Eric had said.
No, it was me.
It was Charlie. Yeah. But the point is that it can't be Dick Clark, because Dick Clark is a robot.
That counts as immortal.
No, it doesn't, because he's not a living being. He's a machine that can be repaired. That doesn't count as immortal.
How do we define alive, though?
Johnny Five, baby. Johnny Five.
I'm just
saying. Johnny Five is alive.
Data.
Data.
Okay, so it needs more more analysis. R2. Anyway, but no, my point I think is it Keith Richards, because I'm fairly sure he gained immortality it back in the 70s through a deal with the devil. Because seriously, there is no one. Here's the thing: the bassist for Rolling Stones, I can never remember his name. He had a serious alcohol problem, and you know what caused him to actually quit alcohol? Keith Moon told him to cut back on his drinking. Or Keith Richards. Keith Richards. When Keith Richards tells you you're drinking too much, you should be dead. Because Keith Richards, I am convinced that Keith Richards has consumed so much alcohol over the years that his insides are permanently pickled. There is no way that they will ever degrade. He has smoked so much that he has evolved past the need for oxygen. And so
he's Darwin from X-Men.
Yes. he has evolved beyond our pitiful mortal state, and the only reason he still looks like he's 70 is because he doesn't care enough to change his appearance yet.
I would like to point out that my comment about Darwin, X-Men First Class is terrible for many reasons. One of the most important ones is that they had one black guy and killed him off in 5 minutes.
Oh, yeah, seriously. What was that, Marvel? Really? You were just like, oh, hey, look, it's a black guy. Not anymore, because he's dead.
Okay.
Was Keith Richards?
Well, yes. I have one quick one for, as far as immortal celebrities.
Immortal.
Go back and look at, like, older movies with Whoopi Goldberg, and then look at her on the show now.
Seriously.
She doesn't look much different at all.
I'm convinced that the Next Generation, that part that she played was true. Like, that whole thing with her? Yeah,
she told Gene Roddenberry, I'm an immortal.
Well, she wasn't really immortal, but, like, her kind lives for, like, 3,000 years anyway, so it's close enough.
Yeah,
Gina episodes are not a movie. They're documentary, but I have 2 points, because I was going to make the Whoopi Goldberg and Keith Richards obviously found the same dude, because they both had to look like they were 65 for the rest of their lives. They're like, what are you, 14, kid? Yeah, I want to live forever. All right. I look like an old man. Yeah, but you want to live forever, and this is how you're going to look. Can I play guitar too? Sure. Can I be really funny? All right.
Okay. The ones that I wanted to mention were Nicolas Cage.
Yeah. Bald spot.
Do we have to talk about Nicolas
Cage? Even the bald, you can get propecia or alopecia.
John Stamos, so we're talking about Nicolas Cage.
Yeah, you can get alopecia and lose your hair and still be immortal. Like that's not a that's a thing. But like if you,
but that's a thing.
Yeah,
like
it's what, true.
Do lobsters have hair before a certain point?
Sean Connery.
And then they go bald?
Yeah.
Okay, Sean Connery has clearly gotten older. Yeah. Patrick Stewart, on the other hand, show me a photo of him where he doesn't look like he does now.
Christopher Lloyd.
I challenge you, Internet, I'm actually challenging you, as a whole, find me a photo of Patrick Stewart where he does not look like he does now.
No Photoshop.
No Photoshop.
I'd like to point out that we're talking about immortality here. Now, of course, at the end of the day, we're talking about eternal youth. No, I agree that Sean Connery is actually immortal. Like, nobody
I honestly feel like the reason Sean Connery is immortal is simply because death thinks he's too cool to mess with. Like, he would show up, and Sean Connery would just kind of, like, look at him, like, what are you going to do, and take another sip of scotch, and Death would be like, you know what? Whatever, we'll just call it even.
So anyway, Nick Cage. Yes.
Yeah. So, Nick Cage, there's actually, I have it here pulled up on my computer right now. There's a picture of a guy who looks an awful lot like Nick Cage from a photo in 1870.
That's where the Monet thing came
from. And somebody sold it on eBay for $1 million, and I swear to Christ, this guy looks exactly like Nick Cage. And Chris is looking at it right now, and he'll tell you.
It's goddamn uncanny, Internet.
It's creepy as hell, and it belongs on the Internet because it's creepy as hell.
Yeah. There's other ones on this list, too, like Amy Poehler.
Pull up the Keanu Reeves Paul Monet picture real quick.
Okay, hold on. I'll pull it up. You can talk amongst yourselves.
Right. No, I want to do mine very last. Disgust. I got a closing guy I want to talk about.
All right. Well, then I will talk about Will Smith. All right, Will Smith has only vaguely gotten older.
Because of the vagueness.
Vaguely gotten older, but let's face facts. He doesn't look a lot different now than he did when he was Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Okay, I've got a big thing to talk about that. I don't know if all of you guys have seen the Graham Norton show.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
It was about a week and a half to 2 weeks ago. Will Smith was on the Graham Norton show. He was on there with his son, who, by the way, dresses like he's actively trying to be in the band The Cure. Thought that was a little weird. But they're talking about rap, and they're talking about the fact that father and son have never rapped together. So Graham Norton clearly planned ahead because Will Smith brought DJ Jazzy Jeff. So he's
they are, like, still best friends.
You know what you should do? You should do the theme song. He goes, and they're in Britain, right? And so he goes, everybody in the entire world knows this theme song. And Will Smith goes, well, yeah, that's why I decided to name my character Will. Because Alfonso Ribeiro, who, by the way, is the guy who plays Carlton, looked at him and said, you know, whatever you name your character, people for the rest of your life are going to yell that. So he went with Will. So they start talking, and they're like, yeah, I'll do the song. So he starts the song. Now, I've seen a lot of videos on the internet, and I can honestly say this is in my top three for videos that actually made me happy. Like, I thought I was going to start clapping watching this video.
Wait.
So, he starts rapping, and his son starts rapping with him, and the audience is going nuts.
I don't want you to go further than there, though, because I want to correct a couple things you said that are mildly inaccurate, and I don't want the internet to hate you because you're beautiful.
Well, I don't care, but what?
Okay, one, he had gotten him to do it on a previous show, and that's what the reference came from. He said, you caught me unprepared last time, but since I brought my son.
All right.
But there's another video with Will Smith and actually Alfonso Ribeiro on the internet.
So he starts doing the song and the audience is going nuts and they finish the song and Will Smith is really getting into this. And he goes, we're not done yet. I have a friend to bring out. And I'm watching this and it's like 3 o'clock in the morning and I'm like, what friend is he? And all of a sudden, you guessed it, Tom Jones starts playing. And this is in Britain, which I didn't know Fresh Prince was that big, the entire audience goes insane. Well, and Carlton comes out, and all of a sudden, as a unit, Will Smith, his son, DJ Jazzy Jeff, and Carlton start to do the Carlton dance. And then they do the Electric Boogaloo, and I gotta say, internet, if you haven't seen the video, look it up, because it might be the best video I've seen in a very long time.
It is a good one.
So, I just want to say one thing while we're talking about Will Smith. Many of you have probably seen the trailers for the movie After Earth, and I just want to say, don't be fooled. Don't be fooled. That movie's directed by M. Night Shyamalan.
Okay, here's the
deal.
Do
not be fooled.
No. Here's the deal. M. Night Shyamalan didn't write the script.
I know he didn't write the script, but he's directing it.
He's had very little artistic input.
Actually, no. Right here. Gary Whitta, screenplay. M. Night Shyamalan, screenplay.
Oh! Then I'm totally not watching it.
No.
I'm sorry, internet, but I swore to myself I was never going to watch another M. Night Shyamalan movie.
I'm still going to watch it.
Signs was okay, but everything else is like,
No. All right, that screenplay's gone through a bunch of people. Enough of what I've read tells me that M. Night Shyamalan has actually had very little to do, because he himself said that he didn't actually want to change anything about the script.
I can't chance it, man. Do you remember The Happening?
Unbreakable was awesome, and he didn't write that one either.
Unbreakable was amazing.
I enjoyed Sixth Sense.
Do you remember The Happening?
I don't know, man. My weakness is Walda.
The Village? Can we go back to this? Because me and Eric are talking about this. Even if they were trying to recreate the 1800s, even in the 1800s, nobody let a retarded kid and a blind girl run through the woods while playing hide and seek.
How do you play hide and seek when you're blind? I don't know.
Exactly. Like, everybody's
hiding.
Everything
is hide and seek.
No, you're just hiding.
And who lets the retarded
kid? But, no, okay, here's my thing. I don't care what you say. I'm going to go see the movie. But my thing is, I don't care if M. Night Shyamalan directed it. I'm going to see anything with Will Smith in it. And I love Jaden Smith, all right? I love that kid.
Honor.
I'm going to see him too. And that's all that matters to me, is that Will Smith and his son are in it, and I think they're a great duo.
I'll at least see it on DVD.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I can't say that I'm going to definitely go see it out in theaters. I mean, I probably will, because Will Smith is really invested in this movie artistically. Like, he wants to make video games, and he wants to expand on this universe and make it really detailed and all this stuff. And when an actor that I like is that into a project that he started, I gotta give it a chance, and I gotta try and support it at the beginning when it really needs it.
I don't know, man. But speaking of supporting artists that are doing projects that you want to see, Vin Diesel. Everybody's familiar with Vin Diesel, obviously.
Go on.
Last year, no, it was the year before last. I'm sorry.
Vin Diesel made it okay for me to be a nerd because, like Vin Diesel, I'm very pretty.
I had an immortal guy left.
Well, I mean, we can get to it.
Vin Diesel's
still young, so he might be immortal.
Vin Diesel is also immortal.
Yeah.
You all may be mad at me, but I just realized that we had an AC unit upstairs.
Yeah, I didn't know. So, I didn't know it was in the window, but
so
I
Chris
had
isn't
it the first
on the
time
show anymore.
Here.
Sorry about that, guys.
You had a window unit just sitting on the floor.
Good job.
Sorry.
But
immortal guys, I just want to do this real fast.
Yeah,
it sucks that Hunter's not here, though. I love you. I love you. Please do not think I am mocking you, because I know you hate everyone that mocks you. I am not mocking you. But there's no other way to describe what I'm saying about you, so please forgive me if for some reason you ever hear this. William Fatner. Not the old Shatner, the young Shatner or middle Shatner, but since he just put on weight, that guy never ages.
Then he started doing documentaries and independent films.
Shatner. I heard William Fatner.
Yeah, and I'm like, I said Fatner the first time because it's since he put on weight and stopped trying
to... Okay, you did say... Okay, yeah, like, yeah, I thought we were talking about an actual person. I'm like, who would name their child? Like, who would keep that name?
Grandpa aged... Well, okay, like, that show that I can't... You know what? I'll say it and I'll cut it out. My dad says that CBS put on. When he was in that show, I was like, wow... He looks good. He doesn't look overworked. He doesn't look tired as like he did in Fanboys. And I liked him. And then I realized there's almost a 10-year gap there.
That's because of all the Botox.
I don't care. That guy is immortal.
Yeah, no, what I was saying about Vin Diesel, two years ago on his Facebook page, he put up a message which basically said that he and David Towie, who's the guy who wrote the original Pitch Black and Chronicles of Riddick, and he said basically, you know, they wanted to make another Riddick movie, but the problem was is they couldn't get the studio to okay it because the budget they wanted was too much. So basically he said to his fans, he said, look, if you want the movie to be made, we'll make it. But something has to happen, he says, and that something is I have to take less money up front. A pretty significant cut in his salary. And he says, now, I'll make it back on the back end because I own part of the rights to the Riddick character, but you guys actually have to go see the movie in order for me to make money. He says, so if I get enough people saying that they're willing to go see this movie, I'll take a cut to my salary and make this movie. I pretty much said to myself, I said, you know what? I guess I'm going to go see this movie on the opening day.
My birthday is on
the other ones in theater. I have to see this one.
My birthday is on September the 7th, and anybody who is my friend is going to take me to go see that movie on September the 6th.
I will take you to go see it in the sense that I will be there and Eric will pay for your ticket.
That's actually probably pretty true on how that's going to happen.
Well, I want to reflect on that. That guy just made one request and he didn't even word it that way because he's too big of a human being, but I am. If you pirate that movie, you're a horrible human being.
Yeah, you really
are. And
he's an asshole.
And I'm not saying I hate pirates and blah, 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 they're killing the movie industry. That guy's like, look, I need you to see this in the theater.
I love pirates, I just don't like pirating.
Even then, like, if, you know, people that do that, you know, like, I don't really think it's killing the industry. Like, they say it is, I think maybe reality television is.
Yeah.
But that's where I am with it. He needs people to go see this in the theater. Because I love Riddick! I love Riddick!
How it's a space not? Opera!
I would really hate to, like, interrupt this stuff, but... It's going to be really hard to convince my wife to let me come out for another one of these things before too long, so we should probably move on to the other topics so we can get into the stuff that you brought me in here specifically for.
Yes.
Dick jokes, right?
Yeah.
Very, very quickly, I have not seen the actual episodes for Avengers Assemble, the new cartoon on Disney, based more on the Marvel Cinematic Universe than the previously established cartoon.
Let's just give an overview of what...
But from the 11 minutes... short they had free to download from iTunes. I'm not a huge fan of the art style. It's neat, except for Hulk, Hawkeye, Falcon, and Captain America. Everybody felt very rigid. Hawkeye was done beautifully, though. I love his script.
I want to ask you a question. Did you feel like it was... Because I watched it, because I have kids.
Yeah,
I watched
Did you feel like you were watching a little bit... kind of same feel like Teen Titans Go, where you're like, I just feel old to be watching this.
No, not at all.
No,
what is
that?
I did. I was like, this is not the same feel that I had for...
What you're hearing right now is a sound from the other room.
It came on earlier. I don't know what it is.
That's an air compressor, I think.
Yeah.
It
sounds like an air unit.
There it goes.
But I think the show has a lot of promise, mostly because they just outright said, they make you think that Red Skull kills Captain America, and they're just like outright, Captain America's dead. Red Skull killed him. Like, that's a mark of a good cartoon, superhero cartoon to me, is when they don't pretend like death isn't real.
Well, see, I haven't seen anything. All my exposure has been secondhand through other people talking about it. My take on it is that, you know, it sounds like it's marketed at kids. The movies are all PG-13. So they're really aimed more at an older audience. They're not for the little kids. Anything that's in cartoon format, especially, like, that's put on, if it's not put on like after 8 o'clock, it's aimed at kids, and the fact that they're tying it in with the established movie canon means that they're trying to get a younger audience. And to me, I find that is awesome, because while I haven't really followed a comic book in almost 10 years, I still like to go into the shops and pick them up and just see what's going on. And anything that brings in younger people continues to get a fresh audience into any kind of media. That is a good thing.
Oh, I have a direct comment on what he said. That's why I don't want to say I didn't like it. I just didn't feel like it was for me.
Oh, yeah. No, I get that.
It was good storytelling.
I totally get that.
I just, you know, I felt like this is for my 8-year-old who's in love with it.
Well, I actually watched both the premiere episodes when they came on Sunday because I took advantage of my DVR since I knew I wasn't going to be awake when they came on. And I feel like they're doing some homages to the one that previously got canceled to bring this one in because the building's the exact same and all that. And after the first 11 minutes... Like, it seems to finally catch its pace, it runs smoother, and I think in general, this show is gonna be amazing.
Yeah, I do think there's a lot of promise for it. I think it's aimed at a younger audience, but not kiddie younger audience.
Yeah.
Like, Teen Titans Go is aimed at kiddie.
That is, my daughter's in love with that show.
Well, I mean, this one is, yes, aimed at kids, but there's enough left in for older fans like ourselves to get into it. If you're big enough into the
And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that a lot of cartoons nowadays are made with enough adult references, or at least they're made serious enough so that adults can watch them with their kids, which, again, I think is another noble effort because, you know, honestly, Eli and I said earlier, our parents raised us on this stuff, and that's... Your kids are going
which
to show
don't take me as an example. Not your children will not turn out like me.
No. No, because I am a decent human being. He is just the evil child.
Evil's a word.
The point I was going to make is that, you know, you need to have an interest in what your kid likes. And you have to do stuff with your kids to really establish any kind of bond with them. It helps them, you know, it helps with your kid has just some problems. Do stuff with your kid. Make them think that you at least believe that you care. You know, even if you're a terrible parent who doesn't.
Make them think that you care.
You know,
and they'll grow up and realize.
But the point is that they're giving the parents an out. No parent wants to sit there and watch a mindless Barney video for 8 hours on end. But
however, our mother still did that for me
because she was good parenting sometimes.
And then I got in the car and drove to school.
Yeah,
you know.
But anyway,
I was 16.
But anyway, the
Teletubbies.
That's what really ruined him. But anyway, it's like, the parents now have something they can do with their kids. You know, and it's mostly going to be, and you think about it, even if they're not geek parents, you know the geek parents are going to be watching that with their kids. But even if they're not geek parents, now, because the movies were so successful and brought to a mainstream audience, now it's not something that, you know, you have to be a geek to get into. So, like I said, just do stuff with your kids. Share your hobbies with your kids. That's what keeps this stuff going.
Now we've done a brief thing on Avengers. As we said at the very beginning of the show, my brother, Hunter, is working and creating a campaign setting for Pathfinder, which we've discussed before. And my first question on that is, what kind of work really goes into that? I mean, I know it's more than just, here's a world, have some fun.
Anybody who has been a GM, to those non-gamers, a GM is the Game Master. He is the person that controls the environment, who actually runs the scenarios. He's the one that has all the information on the monsters. Anyone who does what's called a homebrew campaign, which they create their own world or create their own scenarios, they don't rely on pre-published stuff. There is a lot of stuff. You have to... Some people just kind of make it up as they go along. Some people do a lot of preparation. And in this, this is something sort of like established stuff, but it's very much different. So I had to go through a lot of establishment. I had to go through, like, what is the religion like? What are the geographies like? The different... There are going to be cultural differences between the different regions. There's stuff that I basically had to go through and ask questions and think, what will people eventually ask? And I tried to come up with enough stuff that they will be able to fill in the blanks later on. And then anything that I add to it through later errata is not going to disrupt what is already established. And to be honest, it's not something that can be done alone. It's like the initial stuff, it started out as just a homebrew that I had gotten from, you know, doing... I had gotten the idea initially by doing some play-by-post role-playing over internet forums. You know, so it started off as something that I would just use occasionally on my own games. And when I decided to actually, you know, hey, there's a niche for this market, I had to understand that I couldn't do this alone. If I wanted to make something that could be sold, it had to be something... I needed other people's input, and I needed other people's perspective, because... And if you really want to get a good... You have to have players that are going to ask the tough questions. You have to be able to come up with stuff. And that's what I had to do. I had to go to friends who have been playing as long or almost as long as I have. And I had to get there. I had basically had to run them through. I had to tell them, this is what I want to do, and run them through the scenarios. And then I had to go and take their questions and find answers for them. I mean, that is just homebrewing. It all depends on your players. But to actually do this, you don't have to just think about what your players want. You have to think about what all potential players are going to do. And that's, it's like almost an order of magnitude beyond just making a homebrew campaign.
Now, would you say, as far as that goes, I mean, obviously you can't please everybody. So, I mean, do you just kind of have to, at a certain point, go, well, you know what, at the end of the day, this particular thing, I'm going to leave it up to whatever GM's using it, because it doesn't matter that badly.
There are a lot of things, and there were a lot of questions that I've got a couple friends who are extremely technical, and they're asking about stuff, and it actually, I'm not going to lie, a couple of these questions almost ended up in a fight with, a verbal fight with me and my friends, because to me, this stuff was not important. In the context of the game, it was not important. It was something that, no, I'm going to leave it up to, I'm not going to give any information. I'm never ever going to give any information on these aspects. I'm going to let the DMs go and the GMs or Game Master, Dungeon Master, whatever term you want to use. I'm going to let them come up with it if they want to explore that. There's a lot of stuff. You know, in the older editions of Dungeons and Dragons, there's always been a staple, which is, the infinite layers of the abyss. Obviously, if they're infinite, then there's going to be an infinite number of demons that rule each layer. So no one's going to go around and make 4,000 demon lords. No, they're going to leave that up to the DMs. They're going to come up with, like, a handful of famous ones, you know, and that's it.
I have a question. I'm going to ask you this because I noticed it stopped happening in modules. Back when, I think even like 25 years since I was 12, so I'm 36, so 25 years.
Far White more Wolf, than me.
Yeah, so not many more. Yeah. I don't know if
three
you played
Vampire.
Three
more since I've been alive.
Yeah, sad, isn't it? White Wolf used to put out these little modules, and I think they stopped doing it towards the end. I don't even remember what edition this was, but we used to play Vampire and Werewolf, and they used to have, because it's all about, it's normally so much about politics in that game, they started putting in things, do not let players go here. Do not let players do this. But I noticed in the past year or so, 2 years, since I started recollecting 4th edition, I don't think I've ever seen a module that said don't let. How is that being handled? Because, I mean, is that a negative faux pas now? Like, you just don't want to tell people that, hey, in the game, don't let them do this.
Well, okay, a lot of that has to do with the fact that, okay, one, it's two different companies. White Wolf is the one that publishes The World of Darkness, which used to be Vampire the Masquerade, Werewolf the Apocalypse. Now it's Vampire the Requiem, whatever they want to call it.
And Wizards of the Coast. Dozen other things.
Wizards of the Coast, which bought out TSR and owns the D&D, the Dungeons and Dragons line.
And to be fair, the Sword and Sorcery, isn't that what they used to call it?
Sword and Sorcery was a line that White Wolf ran using the open game license. Basically, Wizards of the Coast came out with these rules that anybody could go and use their 3rd edition and 3.5 rules as long as they followed, like, these specific guidelines.
Right.
The difference was that you saw some of it in the old TSR stuff. It's like, look, if players do this, they're just flat out going to die. So do everything you can not to let them do that. However, and White Wolf took a different approach. Plus, you know, the World of Darkness was a much different game than D&D. And there was a lot of stuff that, it was a gritty game, it was a game that was not forgiving to stupid players. If you want to keep your campaign from being derailed, then you had to stop them doing that.
Yeah.
In 3rd edition, 3.5, and in 4th edition, Wizards of the Coast took it a completely different direction. What they did was, they actually would, they would say, try and steer your characters away from this, but if they're determined, here are some ideas for you to carry it in this direction.
That's exactly what I was talking about. That's awesome.
Yeah, and see, it's I'm modifying the Evernight campaign for Savage Worlds. I like the campaign setting. It sounds really cool, but I'm modifying it to fit what I want to do with it. We're actually going to be in a couple weeks, you know, playing. You guys are going to be able to hear it. It'll be our sister podcast. Eric's actually been helping me a little bit with the classes and stuff, but that's kind of the approach I'm taking. Is less, you know, you can't do this. Well, you totally can. Somebody's probably going to shoot you in the face for doing that, but I'm never going to stop you from doing anything.
That's a great line in this game. Yeah, I would point my gun at people unless you want to.
There's a lot of stuff. It's like, In larger groups, yes, I will flat out tell people, no, you can't do that. Because in a large group, there's so many other people to think about that you have to go and say, look, I don't have the time to devote
to
that.
You have to be fair to the other players.
But in small groups, there are certain things, especially I've run Ravenloft, games in the Ravenloft setting, which some of the older D&D groups will know. That is one of the... Dark Sun is the only setting that is less forgiving than Ravenloft. There were times, I ended up in a verbal confrontation with a player because he insisted on doing stuff, and basically he had no idea what Ravenloft was like. He this was his first time playing, and he wanted to do an action. I told him, like, I had him roll a wisdom roll at first to see if he thought that was a good idea, and I told him, no, your character knows this is not a good idea. This is a terrible idea, what you were about to do. And he said, well, no, I still want to do it. And I was like, okay. And I'm like, I'm going to give you a chance. I'm going to tell you what's going to happen. And then I'm going to give you a chance to back out. And so he said, no, I'm going to do it. And I told him, okay, well, you go off alone into the woods and you get eaten by direwolves. And he's like, well, I can take direwolves. Why aren't you like letting me roll the combat? It's like, you can take 3 direwolves. They run in packs of about 10.
Yeah.
You cannot survive. I'm not going to waste the time to do the combat for that. And it actually got to the point where he almost stormed out. And there are certain times when you can't just let players do stuff. But normally, I'm kind of this is what the area is like. If you want to go out and do something, that's great. Otherwise, if you want to go out and do this, I was like, okay, I can have this this happen. I'm not going to what the game term is railroading. I'm not going to railroad you into a specific thing unless it has to happen for the plot, and unless you're just being bullheaded and refusing to go along with the plot.
People could know how much I'm nodding my head.
Yeah. Now, I also run several games, since at the moment we're talking specifically about that. I mostly run superhero games. Well, what I like to do is, instead of railroading, where it's like, you're on this track, you can't go off of it, I like to do what I call park fencing. We ever notice how really big parks, they don't really have paths, but they do have this, like, tiny little wire that's on, two sides of what might be a path and go along and nobody ever wants to step over them? That's what I do. I like to subtly make my players go in a direction, which is ideally what you want to do. I did want to ask you a question. Now, to make a campaign setting, the ones I've seen, they always have artwork. I'm assuming that's a plan.
Yes. Yes, a couple of, as I said, it started off with my idea and my homebrew notes. When I brought my friends into it, obviously it evolved from this because, before they,
I like that you said evolved instead of changed, because that is a much better term.
Just saying changed, it makes it sound like, oh, well, it was this, and then we decided that wasn't working and we made it this. No, it was a lot of small, subtle changes that turned it from this initial thing into this close to final thing.
Now it can use tools.
Like, for example, there are going to be... It's made for use with the Pathfinder RPG system. We initially, I had never thought of making new base classes, which are classes that run from level 1 to level 20. However, that was pointed out. I was like, no. My friend said, look, it needs something to set it apart. And so we decided, okay, we're going to run with that idea. That's one of the things that's going to be added. And we have two of the people working on it are very good artists. My friends Ernie Campos and Amanda McClay, they are fantastic. They will, tell you up and down that, no, they're really not that good. But don't listen to them. They are phenomenal.
They are liars. They are beautiful.
Ernie is going to be, he is a great... much better landscape artist than he is figure. So he's going to be doing all of landscape illustrations. All of the larger pictures. He's going to be setting up the design. The character sketches for, iconic characters for the setting. The sketches for any of the new races, new classes. Amanda is going to be doing those. She is a phenomenal figure artist.
When I say I'm an artist, I'm drawing stick figures compared to what Amanda does.
It's true. And he is not... Eli is not a bad sketch artist by any means.
Okay, so you talked about creating character classes, and I mentioned this earlier, me and Eric, because at this point, it's less mine so much as it's me and Eric's campaign.
They gave birth to it.
We did the character classes thing, and I mean, like at what point... classes. Part of our concern was we start making these, and we fall in love with the character classes. We start imagining... how much fun it is to play with these. At what point do you decide, all right, this is enough? Because, like, we stopped at 8 for our base character classes. Now, Savage Worlds works a lot differently than Pathfinder with the way you level up. But now, once you get to a certain level, you're going to open up, for at least our game, a new level of character classes. You can specialize in yours, or you can broaden out. How do you pick the... I mean, how difficult is it to find that balance where you want to have your players have fun, but you don't want to give them a character that's so OP that they just... And by the way, OP is overpowered. That it breaks your game. I mean,
World of Warcraft. Yeah. Well, plays Paladin and
Shaman. First off, that's where it comes down to a lot of what is known as playtesting. And it's really... after a certain point, there is nothing you can do except, all right, well, this sounds nice, but is it underpowered? Is it overpowered? The only way you can do that is to just go and roll up a character in that class at, say, you know, a good level is somewhere between 5 and 10, because that's when you usually start to get the really good stuff, but you haven't gotten into the super powerful stuff. So once you get, like, past level 10 in most classes in 3rd edition through Pathfinder, you really have... That's when you start getting the really super-powered stuff. So it's really hard to judge whether this is really overpowered or not. You just have to plug it in and try it out.
Okay. Well, to break away from just the classes, you're talking about how you brought in people to help you with stuff. There's one thing about campaign settings, besides just modules, is they have a book full of fluff and layouts and different, like, new, just basically, like, cities, deities, everything. Like, how are you handling all that? Are they helping with this, or is this just going
yes.
up like you had before?
Yes. David and Donna Patterson. David is not... David is mostly the technical guy. He is the one that really, if I have an idea, I run it by him first, and he is the one that is able to go and point out and say, all right, that sounds cool. What about this aspect? His wife, Donna, she is a fantastic writer, and what I've been doing is anything that passes, if I can come up with a decent enough detail of something that it passes the David test, then it goes on to Donna. And Donna's the one that expands this and, you know, kind of builds on it. And the thing is, like, a lot of times she will come back to me and is like, is this okay? And to be honest, at this point, I have acknowledged that it is as much their baby as mine. So
when you say she expands it, she more like, you have the general idea, she sort of builds it up, like, adds in more of, like, the flowery languages, it makes it flow.
Yes,
like that.
Imagine if the campaign setting is a human body, what I am doing is providing the skeletal structure and, like, maybe the ligaments and tendons, maybe a little bit of...
Maybe the nervous system.
Maybe the nervous system. What she is doing is she's putting the musculature on. She is the one that is actually, like, putting the skin, the hair, the pigmentation.
Perfectly coiffed hair, which I
and,
have.
I mean, I am, to an extent, helping her with that, because there's... I mean, we've had to come up with not just major cities, but a list of minor cities. You can't just go and say, oh, here's a continent, and this is the capital city. This is, like, there are two capital cities for a couple nations. No, you've got to have, this is, like, the biggest city on that continent. And this one is almost as big, but it's a major trade hub. And this one is actually kind of small, but it's important because of its, you know, so on and so forth. So you... And it's not something... It's something... Well, it is something that one person can do alone, but it would take me 10 years to do that. You know, so that... It really... It takes a lot of people working at it from different angles to get it just right.
Okay, so, you know, we're talking about making it. How important do you think it is to... I guess the term I'm looking for is relinquish control. So much as, you know, a lot of these ideas are mine, but I throw them to Eric to see how he would refine them. How important do you think it is for anybody that wants to do this to kind of realize that, you know, you can be the idea man, but you have to give up a certain amount of control to your playtesters, to your friends that are giving you ideas, to kind of help, let them help you refine it so that you don't end up with something where, you know, it's, well, you can only do this and you can only do this way. I mean, how important is that to kind of give up that control and let your playtesters have their...
I like to think of it in the terms of a bad haircut.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say you go and you get it, you try a new haircut, and you love it. But you go out to all your friends, and they're like, dude, that looks terrible on you. At some point, you have to accept that, okay, yeah, you like it, but it makes you look like a douchebag. You know, you really have to accept that there is some stuff that you need outside perspective on. And sometimes you have to accept that that outside perspective is going to be more accurate than your own. Because a lot of it, because you're seeing, especially if it's something that you've worked really hard on, you're seeing it through the rose-tinted glasses of your own confidence and pride. And that is just never going to be a good combination.
Well, it's like how story writers have editors who go back and they'll catch little things. And
that's really what it's come down to, is that these guys, it's not just making the classes, the base classes and prestige classes. I'm the one who's actually come up with all this stuff, but I still have to go and run it through them because I'm like, this is awesome. I love this, the way it's put up. And then they're like, well, this language, you know, makes the way you've put this language, it really doesn't make any sense, or this would make it super powerful. You need to limit this. And so that's where it really comes down into you got to have other people.
Oh, man.
Yes, Charlie?
All I remember was Forgotten Realms. Give me a second. Oh! So that, I was going to say that it sounds like you're doing it like, and this sounds horrible because I played RPGs for a long time, so forgive me when I say this, not you, but TSR, who doesn't exist anymore.
Thank God.
They had Forgotten Realms is sitting, and it was good. It wasn't great. And then this guy wrote a book about his role-playing game, and they were like, you know, this guy, the way he does some of this stuff, I really like some of the stuff they do. And all of a sudden, it started growing. And it sounds like you're kind of doing it that from the first step instead of, like, when they used to slam a book down and be like, this is how this stuff works. Because a good example of that is I had trouble playing Greyhawk in 2nd Edition.
Mm.
It's 2nd Edition, right?
Yeah. Greyhawk is a standard D&D setting.
Yeah, but they released this setting book that made it really complicated for me to play. And I was like, I always thought these things... I like the idea that things are what I believe they are. Like, trolls look like what I think they look like, and it doesn't matter. You know, we all have a different idea of what a troll looks like. We just, you know, he's really big and green, and his arms just grew back. No, that's probably a troll. Okay. And Greyhawk had all these specifics that kind of, I don't know, stole the magic from me for a little while in advanced D&D. But then they released the Forgotten Realms, and I was upset with that. I was like, this isn't as exciting as I thought. And then all of a sudden, these books started changing the whole universe. And I really like it. Sounds like that's how you're writing it. You're like, let's see if I can change, if there is something here I'm not seeing. Because I think that is really how organically setting should be.
Basically, as a group, our entire team has decided that what we want is to create something that, basically, you have a certain number of inviolate rules. These are kind of the way the universe works in this world. This is the way, you know, this is the way the planes are set up. This is the way the deities work. This is, you know, how the cities interact with each other. Beyond that, it is up to this is the history. Beyond that, it's up to the GM of each individual game to go and interpret, okay, well, this is what I want to do with it. You know, if there's going to be a world-changing event, then we're going to do it, and then the GMs can eat, and what we're going to basically put down is anything established after that initial thing, you know, as far as we're concerned, it's going to be established canon. But we're not going to go and say, you can't run this if you're not going to accept this. It's all going to be, you know, the individual games.
Now, I mentioned before, I usually run superhero games, which means I usually run a modern setting. How do you think it's a lot easier to create a setting for a modern type of game than it is for a fantasy, like a medieval fantasy type?
In short, hell no. The longer answer is that the problem is, in a modern setting, you don't have the suspension of disbelief that you do in even in a modern fantasy setting, because there's established technology. There is like Shadowrun kind of gets around it by pushing the modern into actually the near future. And then some of the other science fiction games, you know, they push it into the far future, so they can just kind of rewrite things. However, like the D20 modern system, they actually had to go and have real things. Even the optional rules to play with magic and have magical creatures, they still accept that this is a modern world, this is the way certain things work. In a fantasy setting, if somebody's like, well, how does this work? If it really comes down to it, the GM can always say, because magic, screw you. That's just
comic books. Comic books. That's I've said that a couple times, where people are like, well, how does that work in the physics? Comic books.
And that's kind of the way it is. If it's set in the modern times, people expect a certain amount of realism, and you have to deliver on that. Whereas in fantasy, it's kind of like everything, you basically lay down, okay, well, this is the way physics works in this world. Because it's not based on the real world. It is a completely separate world, so the rules can be whatever you want. putting it in a modern setting in our world, which is because that's what whenever someone says modern, that's almost always what they think of. You have to follow our rules to a certain extent.
So in the same vein of that, you would be, if you had the setting you're working on, but in our world, you would have to come up with, well, how does the existence of orcs affect daily politics? Yeah, you know, like, are hobgoblins your, you know, are they usually enforcers for mob guys and things like that?
See, if I put it in terms of a modern setting, it's like, if I were to do that, I would have people asking me, like, do all the different races have the same rights? Are humans still the dominant species? Do they treat everybody else as second-class citizens? I mean, what happens, you know, are the...
Was there a million orc march?
You know, or does each continent, is each continent like the homeland of one of these races? It just makes it more complicated. And not only that, but then you also have to understand, like, there's no real translation for our modern social mores into things that are traditionally a fantasy setting. It's like if you're driving down the road and, you know, somebody stops you and you get out to ask what's going on and they try to rob you. If you pull out a gun and just shoot them dead, there are a whole lot of legal ramifications that you're going to have to do. Even in states where that was still a legal self-defense, you still have to go and answer. You have to file a police report. They still have to do a full investigation, things like that. In a fantasy setting, if you're riding a horse down the road and a bunch of bandits jump out at you and you just slaughter them where they stand, no one really cares because you were a lawful traveler and they tried to rob you. It's just kind of an accepted social thing. Yes, maybe the paladin is going to try and get them to surrender first, but it's a whole different cultural mindset.
It's a poor filing system, that's all.
Yeah. Actually, we wanted to ask you about... We touched on it briefly in our last podcast. Edition hate. I think my question for you specifically is 3.5 Dungeons & Dragons to 4th edition Dungeons & Dragons, and
supposed to weigh in first.
Shortly we're going to have
D&D Next
is what it's going to be called.
So, as I said last time, I just started playing. I've only picked up 4th edition. I've never played 3.5 or Pathfinder, although I totally would be down to if we ever decide to run one of those as a group of friends. I've only ever played Silver Age, and we're just now getting a Shadowrun and Savage Worlds. That's my only experience, and it's all the newest editions. But I do tend to frequent a lot of message boards, and I do see a lot of hate for it. And like I asked last time, and you have a lot of experience in it, I don't really understand the hate for it. I see a lot of, well, you've killed the roleplay elements with 4th Ed, or you know, it's not as complex. But a lot of it tends to seem to me, and this is as an outsider, this isn't as somebody who's played, I'm just saying it. It seems to me a lot of less, I don't like the mechanics so much as I don't like new things, and I don't like the fact that, I mean, from at least from my point, because I looked at the 3.5 rulebook, 4th Ed's a lot easier for a beginner to pick up.
See, and that's the point I got. It's like, as the editions go, I would actually prefer to play AD&D to playing 4th edition. That's not saying that I don't find 4th edition to be fun. That's not saying that I can't have fun running or playing 4th edition. But, as you said, it is a simple setting. However, it was designed to be a simple setting. That's the whole point. Wizards of the Coast, they were having, like, their sales drop off. And that was one of the reasons. And the thing that it came down to is that their marketing research said that 3rd edition and 3.5, they were just too complicated and daunting for the guy that wanted to start. So they came up with 4th edition, which, yes, it plays a lot like an MMO. But, again, a lot of the people that were going to come from other things into this would be coming from MMOs. That would be kind of the experience they had. So that would be an easy, familiar thing to help ease the transition.
Yeah, one of the big things I hate about 4th edition hate, and not that I don't think people have some...
You
valid,
hate about 4th edition, or no, you hate the about hate. The hate?
I really liked... 3.5 wasn't my favorite. AD&D was. Advanced Dungeons & Dragons, back then, you could just do it all. And that's what I was talking about before. But
well, I think a lot of that is familiarity. That's the first thing you did. See, that's why I love 3rd edition and 3.5. Because I technically played with, like, when I was 8, I played around with, like, the red box. And I've played around with AD&D. But I never really... at the time I was playing it, I never really understood it. Third edition was the first rule set that I actually understood.
Well, let me ask you, at that time, you had friends that you were like, God, this is so much fun. I wish I could do this with you. But I know you're going to have trouble with this. And, like, right now, like, I would have had a real hard time explaining role-playing to my wife if we hadn't started with fourth edition. Because it was...
I love the way that sounds, by the way.
Yeah, I'm going to get beat up for this later. It's out of her realm, and as you become an adult, you lose some of that magic with your imagination, and things need to make sense. You need things explained to you, because that is how most people grow up. These are a set of instructions, this is how it works.
Yeah.
Summer would have had a hard time with this other stuff, because we tried to do some stuff, but when we came to 4th edition, like, it was... We're like, oh, it's an MMO, it's an MMO, it's an MMO. I never felt, when I looked at this, I was like, I don't feel like they ripped off MMOs. I feel like they were like, the reason people can just sit down and play an MMO is because everything's right here and in front of them. This is how it works. This is how many times you can use it, and this is when you can use it again. And my wife understood that.
Yeah.
I invite anybody who wants to see about how complex the different rules for the different versions are, and you can see the differences in the editions are. I invite you to look up in the core rulebook for the Dark Sun campaign setting the rules for mass battles, because there is so much math involved in there that it will drive you crazy. And then I want you to go look up in the first third edition book, or in the 3.5 books, the rules on grappling. And then I want you to go to fourth edition, and I want you to look up the rules on large creatures in melee reach. That'll give you kind of an idea about the difference between them, which is they started out, at least in AD&D, I only ever played AD&D once, and that was when I was in middle school. They started out almost intentionally obtuse, and then it went to the third edition where they simplified everything a great deal because they wanted to everything to flow a lot faster, because there's just an adage about D&D, which is in D&D, a 3-hour trip takes 5 seconds. But a 10-second battle takes 3 hours. I always thought that was one of the things that was a weakness of the system. In the end, I think that by simplifying the rules and putting more focus on combat, they did eliminate a lot of the role-playing, but you can still get that even out of the simpler rule systems.
Well, I want to wrap my point up about Summer. And we brought her over to play Savage Worlds, which isn't difficult.
Right.
Savage Worlds is incredibly easy to pick up.
But she had a lot of trouble picking it up, and we got to use references from her 4th edition experience. So I offer that as an argument, because I am a very argumentative person, even though I try very hard to keep my temper in check. I'll happily debate that with you. One of the best things that ever happened was having a gateway role-playing game. And that helped my wife learn to play role-playing. And now we share that. So I love the fact that 4th edition exists, but there are more things I want out of D&D games.
I need to go back to the initial point, one of the things I was asked about, like the loss of role-playing. And the thing is, like, that is the absolute stupidest argument, and I don't care how much hate mail that you try to send to these guys, because it's not going to go to me.
the announcer will now tell you our email.
It doesn't matter, because they're going to ignore all the hate mail that you send because of this, because if you really are going to argue this point, then you're retarded and we don't want to listen to you. The point is that role-playing all depends on the DM and the players. If the players aren't going to role-play, then it doesn't matter what system they use. They can use AD&D, they can just be like banging sticks together and write and, you know, making character sheets out of their own feces. It's not going to cause them to roleplay if they don't want to.
Amen, brother.
And the same with the DM. If the DM's not going to give them the chance to roleplay, then it doesn't matter what edition they're using. If the DM's not going to encourage them to roleplay, then it doesn't matter what edition they're using.
All right. I said this last time. I've been playing roleplaying games since I was 10 because I would harass Hunter and his friends while they were playing because I was a loser kid and wanted to hang out with my brother's cool older friends. Which was a great misjudgment on my part.
Because they were just as big losers as you.
Exactly. But they let me play, so I've been playing these games for more than half my life. And I can find something to love about pretty much any system. And I don't understand a lot of edition hate. My first experience with DME was 3.5.
Actually, third edition.
Third edition, that's true. The third edition. But that was very brief before it switched to 3.5. And I love 3.5. I genuinely do. I really, really do. Especially all of their rules. There's a book they have, The Complete Scoundrel, and I love everything about it because I love being a scoundrel. What I love about 4th edition is that I feel like I have more opportunities to roleplay because everything's so much simpler. You know, a combat, unless you have a very large group, shouldn't take very long.
Yeah. And if I'm just, again, the edition hate, it really comes down to people are... There is some that's understandable between 3rd edition and 3.5. And that's just because 3rd edition had existed for barely 2 years before they came out with 3.5. 3.5 closed up a lot of the holes that 3rd edition had. The problem people had is that they made them buy all new books, which was $100. That's a lot of money.
Okay, well, we're actually getting towards the end of the show, so I want to do parting shots and plugs and stuff like that. So if anybody has anything they want to say, go ahead and say it, and then I'll go into our plugs for the end.
As always, Jerseys is a supporter of us.
Yeah, we'll do the plugs.
Yeah.
Do the plugs.
Well, fine. Profound. I got nothing to say.
I do.
I would like to say that, again, Jerseys is great. It's great because, one, they give us a place to play, to run our games. And the fact is that John, one of the owners, he has been around so long, he has seen every edition. And to him, he can sit there and argue all day long about how one edition is better than the other if you just give him the chance. And the thing is, he doesn't personally believe that any of them are better than the other. They're all great. They all have their benefits. They all have their detriments. And you need to find somebody who knows that and who can explain them, and then you can make your own informed decision.
All right. Well, Charlie, you had something you want to say?
I do. While we're coming to the end of the show, I want to bring up something, two real quick points, and then we'll wrap it up with that. When I was an awkward kid, I was named Charlie Brown. That is my real name. You can Google me. My real name is Charlie Brown. It made awkward growing up where I did because I was a fat kid named Charlie Brown. How much more explanation do you need? But I didn't have any friends. Role-playing games gave me a chance to do that, and not because of a specific game. It's because I got to sit around and all of us got to just make up fictional characters and care about them and go back and forth. You want to interrupt for this?
I just want to bring up that I know that a lot of the internet seems to think that D&D is a lot of, you know, nerdy guys sitting around doing math and talking about wizards. I don't fit that mold. A lot of my friends don't. I've actually gotten a lot of them into it. D&D, any of these role-playing games, all you need to have is imagination. It doesn't matter what story you want to tell. You can do it. You don't have to be super into sorcery and magic. You can tell any story you want. And I love that Charlie brought that up because it doesn't matter what you like. It doesn't matter who you are.
There is a
you can find
out
a game
there
for
you.
Yeah. There is actually a professional wrestling role-playing game.
Yeah, well,
it's actually pretty neat. It's actually pretty awesome.
Most people that hate on role-playing games are like, oh, they're not for me.
They play fantasy sports.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, there's an episode of Big Bang Theory where they're like, I don't get it. Let's go down and buy a comic book. What comic book? We read Thor. And they're like, why is it so dumb? It's so obvious to what Thor is to me. And then they have a 30-minute conversation throughout the entirety of the episode of what Thor is to them and how they argue that Hulk can't pick up the hammer. Women are these women that have never read a comic book before. Hulk can't pick up the hammer. Well, he can pick up Thor while he's holding the hammer. Then didn't he pick it up? And it turns into this big running gag. But that illustrates my point beautifully. You never know you won't love something until you give it a chance. You'll never know you're not passionate about it. And then
I tell that to women all the time.
And then it is
different when we're talking about butt stuff.
It is different for everyone in the experience. You can all love it the same and it still be something different for each of you. So I wanted to leave you with that.
But I think the overarching message of this episode, aside from all the inane crap that we talked about before, was the fact that if you have something you love, if you love it, don't be ashamed of doing it. Because if you're ashamed of doing something you love, then it takes all the enjoyment out of it for
Unless
you.
You're a clopper. Be ashamed.
Be very ashamed.
Yeah, we talked about that last time. I don't think we need to revisit it. But I want to go through all of our plugs for all of our great sponsors, even though they don't really sponsor us, but these are the people we love and that we support. So screw it. We'll give them the free press anyway if anybody's
sponsor
listening.
Sponsor me!
So first and foremost is Jerseys, Cards, Comments, and Games. You can find them on Facebook. We always put the thing down in the bottom of the show notes. Basically just search Jerseys, Cards, Comics, Inc. or Jerseys, Cards, Comics, and Games on Facebook. They'll give you all the information. They have locations in Yorktown, Gloucester, and Hampton. They are the friendliest people, and they have the best stores around, comic stores around. They also deal in board games, and, you know. The other sponsor that I like to mention a lot is Pinnacle Entertainment Group. or PEGInc.com is their website. They're the makers of the Savage Worlds game system and its constituent modules. Shane Lacey Hensley, who is actually, I got his title wrong last time. He's not the creative director of PEG Inc. He is the president. And he's also a Virginia native. He went to Virginia Tech. Yes.
Woo,
so, yeah, there's
and
that.
He writes
there's
that.
There's nothing
yeah.
woo about.
He actually wrote us back, and he was the only one out of all the ones we sent to. So, mad props to him for that. Also, wanted to say that since we're talking about role-playing games so heavily in our second hour, I encourage anybody listening to this, if you are listening to this just because you're curious about whatever we want to talk about, or you just want to hear us ramble, I don't care. If there's anything you can take away from this, and that is I want to say this. Go out and play. Go out and read comic books. Go out and read novels, fantasy novels, sci-fi, science fiction, cyberpunk, whatever you want to do. Just go out and do it, because you never know, you might like it.
One last thing I want to point out. My friends and I, we are going to be using Kickstarter to promote to make the first run of the physical copies of this campaign setting. When we are done, it will be run through Kickstarter. These guys will be telling you about it when we are ready to launch. So please, when it's ready, they will give you all the information. Donate. If only you pledge us enough to just buy a friggin' PDF of our material. Buy it, look it over, and if you like it, then great. But You just have to go out and try it and play and find what you like.
Also, because I desperately want them to send us free stuff, welovefine.com, spelled exactly how I said it. They have some of the most beautiful things, especially
Eli
their
is
prints.
Currently wearing some of their merchandise.
I am actually wearing their Hawkeye purple.
Yeah. I swear
it's
you must own like 10 of those.
That he paid for with his own monies.
I do laundry every week. And I only wear, like, the same 5 shirts. I have 40 shirts, but I only wear the same 5. But seriously, check them out. Buy their stuff. They are beautiful.
Yeah, both me and Eli own a couple shirts. And I will actually be getting a couple more next week. They're awesome shirts. I really love the different art styles they offer. Yeah. So please check them out. And you know what's cool? When you order stuff from them, they just give you free stuff.
Yeah. No, they're just like, hey, oh, you're spending this much? Here, have some free
I've got
stuff.
A poster with an ice cream sorcerer. I don't know what else you want.
I will be off of the show in a couple months, but I will still be a part of the show.
And we're
going to
miss him immensely.
I am. But
yeah, we might. If, once we get our audio
there
problems worked out,
Charlie
we might be able to Skype Charlie
in
so he can participate.
Yeah, and I really want to thank Hunter for being here. And this is all a huge part of something that Eric, me, Chris sat around. I didn't even think could happen. And then look, it turned into this. But that doesn't mean you can't be one of us, too. If you have a good idea, if you have something you want to kick or create, or Hunter will get FaceTime on every show till his project gets started. You can be one of us, too. All you have to do is write this show, tell us you're passionate about it, send it to us, and we'll give you a shot. Us one.
Oh, yeah. Also, we haven't heard from anybody about the evil Captain Planet. Well, not evil Captain Planet, but
saying.
Captain Jerk.
Okay. Like he said, he just kicked around an idea with Eric and didn't think it would go off. That's the thing. You don't know what will happen until you actually talk to people about it. Talk to your friends. Just talk to people in general. You never know what will happen.
I would like to say I don't know how much FaceTime Hunter's going to get because he actually has responsibilities.
Yeah.
No. I mean, his Kickstarter, I'll keep it on there till.
Oh, yeah. We'll keep plugging it.
Hunter will be
yeah,
Hunter
we'll
will
keep talking about
the show,
but the most important question of the show.
Yes, is actually we still have not heard about what people feel the ring, the 5 rings that would summon Captain Jerk and what those powers are. Remember, email us at
wetalktoourselves@gmail.com.
And let us know. You have to tell us. Really, I just want to know. So, like, you come up with 5 rings, I will expand on what they do. But
is there
if you,
a comment section on the site?
There is, but I want to put a couple caveats on this because I don't want to have to edit this for like 9 hours because of the. It has to stay PG-13, okay?
Oh, yeah, keep it PG-13.
Anything you wouldn't say in front of your mom, probably don't say to us.
Unless you have our mother.
Because our mother would listen to X-rated dialogue sometimes.
But here's the big deal. Also, send us. If you want us to talk about something, email us. You know, we might talk about it by accident, but you won't know that we're going to talk about it if you don't email us. Let us know, because we want to keep, you know, we want to talk about what you want to talk
ideas,
about.
Ideas, concerns, comments, hate mail. You know what? Send it all to us. I'll read it all.
Yep, and hopefully when we get some more listenership, we'll have a lot of audience participation, because that's really what we want out of this, because we want to hear from people like you, because you're people like us. And I, for that reason, I also like Charlie said earlier, I want to thank Hunter for coming in today, just hanging out here. I know that he has responsibilities and dogs and a wife that he has to get home to, so I'm going to let him do that.
I'll be back whenever my wife decides to let go of the leash again.
So. Yeah, and we thank you for that, and we thank you for letting us, you know, talk to you, well, as we talk to ourselves. For that, I'm Eric.
I'm Eli.
Thomas.
I'm Chris.
I'm Charlie Brown.
And I am special guest Hunter.
Thank you for listening as we talk to ourselves. You have a great one.
You said you wouldn't say about the helmet.
Well, that's it for this week. Join us next week. Until then, our closing music is going to be Monkey Grip by Cow. I hope you enjoy it, and thanks for listening to us talk to ourselves.
All licensed works on this podcast are used under the auspices of the Creative Commons license. Works not covered by this license are used under United States Code 17, Section 107, pursuant to the Fair Use Law.